Good morning, and welcome to Intermission, where we press pause to hear your story and talk about how to be the light in a world that can feel so dark. So grab your coffee. It's time to wake up. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time zone you're living in and when you are listening to this. I'm Mern, and my cheeks hurt because I am looking on the screen. We are remote for this podcast with my dear friend, Brock Hayhoe, whose stage name is Brooklyn Heights. And I met Brock through Shakti, through our love of yoga in Nashville. And boy, things have really taken off for you, Brock, and I want to get into it. But real quick, I took this right from your website and just want to share with everyone listening. If you don't know Brock or Brooklyn Heights, you're in for a treat. The Toronto native received her dance training at the National Ballet School of Canada. And in 2008, she traveled worldwide performing as a principal ballerina in an all-male drag ballet company. I did not know that.
Oh, so you didn't know that?
Yeah. I didn't know. I mean, I knew that you were in ballet, yada, but I did not know that. I wish I could see that show. And then set her sights on the world of drag, winning multiple Canadian pageants. And in 2014, winning the coveted Miss Continental crown in the United States. The following year, Brooklyn accepted a prestigious residency at Play Dance Bar in Nashville, Tennessee. Holy crap, if you never caught a show there with Brooklyn Heights, you are missing out. Brooklyn was honored to be the first Canadian to appear on the cultural phenomenon RuPaul's Drag Race. Season 11, by far the best, I think. I might be a little biased, but... And throughout her time on the show, she became known for her polished runway looks and iconic lip sync performances. And you caught on to the dance moves better than anyone. I will say that. She finished as first runner up, which, you know, I'm going to say with when Pam Queer came out, I then dropped her and I was like, oh, she is winning. This is it. But anyways, now Brooklyn Heights you've had season one of Canada's Drag Race, Now we're sitting here. So never fear, the Queen of the North is here.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mern.
How are you?
I'm over the moon. And Pride Month is upon us. Like, what better time to sit down and catch up? And today, how are you?
I'm good. I'm doing really good. It's just weird. It's a weird time in the world, isn't it?
Is it?
I don't know if you've noticed.
What? Yeah, just a little.
No, but I'm good. I think I just feel really hopeful these days because you see things start to open up more. And just seeing people being able to go back out and have fun and go see their families and hug their loved ones and stuff like that. It's just like my screen fell. No, it's just like, it's a nice feeling. I really like that. It's all kind of coinciding with spring and summer, and that's a nice feeling by itself. And then you have this, it feels like the world is kind of opening back up a little bit, which I love.
It does, doesn't it? It does feel hopeful. I agree with that. And yeah, the timing, it is pretty sweet with spring. And we actually just had our first hydrangeas pop out here at our home. So we're very proud. Yeah. So we want to touch on all of the things.
All of them.
Let's start. I want you to share your story. So little Brock. Yeah, tell us about little Brock, where you grew up, obviously Canada, I'm guessing. Just what that looked like growing up and up to now.
Totally. Well, yeah, I grew up in Toronto, Canada, in a little suburb called Etobicoke, just outside of the downtown GTA. I was the youngest of four. And I grew up in a very kind of Christian household. My mom was a missionary kid. So she grew up in Malaysia in the jungle My grandpa owned a hospital there, or operated a hospital there. And then I think she moved back to Canada when she was in her teens. And my dad was also raised very, very strict Christian. And so they met in the church and started having kids. And I was number four. So it was an interesting upbringing, because it was a very sheltered upbringing, as you can mm-hmm. imagine.
Brothers or sisters?
Two sisters, one brother.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was a very kind of like sheltered upbringing, which was interesting for me. And I was obviously always a very different kid. I was one of those kids you could kind of tell. It was like, oh, there's something special about them.
Yes.
So I grew up in that environment, and then I kind of found my way into dance. I think I was about 14 years old at the time, and I didn't have any hobbies. I didn't play any sports, obviously, and I tried horse, obviously. I mean, I actually did. I played hockey for a year, and I hated it. And it was Saturday morning, and I had to wake up at like 5 o'clock on a Saturday morning to go play hockey. But then I also had to wake up at like 7 o'clock on Sunday morning to go to church. So I just did not get a day off. I didn't get like a day to like chill and watch cartoons. But so I hated that. But yeah, so I didn't have a hobby really. So I convinced my parents to let me try a dance class. And it turned out I had a natural ability for it. And from there, I decided to audition for a high school called Etobicoke School of the Arts. To go for musical theater, which is funny because I can't sing, but I was determined I was going to go for musical theater. So I auditioned and I got in somehow. The story I like to tell myself is that they took one look at me and they're like, this kid is going to get the shit beat out of him if we send him to a normal high school. So it was like a mercy. It was like a mercy hire.
Let's protect him.
Yeah, exactly. So I went there for my grade 9 year. And while I was there, a friend of mine who was in the dance program was like, hey, I am going down to the National Ballet School of Canada to audition for their summer school. You should come with me. And I was like, sure, why not? I didn't think too much about it, but I decided I was going to go. So me and my mom went down. And my mom loves to tell the story because she was like, it was so funny because I had basically no dance training, especially in ballet. Like I'd been doing jazz like 1 hour a week for like 9 months. And she's like, so we went down there and you were in this audition with all these other people. And I was the only one that got accepted to the summer program from my audition group. And she's like, I felt terrible because like all these little girls' dreams were crushed and everyone was crying. And there you were, who hadn't even like done it very long. And she was convinced I wasn't going to get in. She's like, you're not going to get in, but we'll go. So I got into the summer program, and and from there I got accepted to the full-time academic like program for grade 10. And yeah, so I went, and that's kind of how my ballet journey started. And I trained there for my whole high school years, and then I stayed for 2 extra years of dance training afterwards, because I needed some catch up. And then from there, I went to – is this okay? Am I just like going through like the
– No, this is okay. Nailing it.
I'm sorry. I was like, I don't know if this is what we're looking for.
Keep going. Okay. No, keep going.
So after I finished my training at the ballet school, I moved to Germany, to Hamburg, to go to a different ballet school because I still hadn't been hired by a professional company. And at this point, I think I was 19 and I was over it. And I was there for like literally a week and a half, and I got a call from this choreographer I had worked with in Toronto. And he was staging a ballet that I had done actually at the ballet school in Toronto in South Africa. And he's like, I'm in Cape Town with Cape Town City Ballet, and I don't like any of the guys here for the part we're doing. So I want you to come down and do it. And I was like, okay, well, I'll come if they give me a contract, like for a year. So he worked it out. So they hired me. And like a week later, I was on a plane to South Africa, which I did not even know existed, by the way. Like I thought, like I knew there, because I didn't pay attention in school, and I obviously knew there was an Africa, but I didn't really ever compute that there was a southern part of it because we just didn't learn about it. So anyway, I moved down there and I lived there for 2 years. And I love living there. I've actually gone back and visited every year since I've left. I made some really good friends there, and it's just, I think it's one of the most beautiful places in the world. So I had a really great time there, but the money was not great. It was living super, super paycheck to paycheck. So, and it just wasn't my dream. Like, it was fun doing the male roles, but I had always just been interested in dancing the female roles more. So that's when I went, I contacted Ballet Trocadero and I was like, hey, I would love to come audition for you again, because I had done it once before, but they wanted to hire me, but they couldn't because I didn't have any work experience. And in order to get a US work visa, you need work experience. So they were like, go away, get work experience, and then come back. So I went away for 2 years. I did it. And then I was like, hey, I'm ready to come. And they were like, awesome. And I applied for the work visa. I got it. And then I moved to New York and I lived there for 4 years and basically traveled all over the world dancing ballet. And it was so fun. It was such a cool experience, like really, really just incredible that I got to do that. It really, it had taught me so much about life and professionalism and everything. And then after about 4 years though, I was just done. Like, my body was so sore and I was in pain all the time. And I just was kind of falling out of love with ballet. And I found, like, the thing I still really liked about my job was the drag aspect of it. So that's kind of, and that was around the time RuPaul's Drag Race was really starting to take off. So it was becoming a little bit more mainstream. So I decided to move back to Toronto and try to see if I could make it as a full-time drag queen. And yeah, it was, I think 6 months after I got to back to Toronto, I was working full-time as a drag queen. And that's been my job ever since. And I think that was 2012 was when I started doing drag full-time. Crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. So
what a path.
I know. It is just, it's thinking back on it, it's all been so random. It's the funny part about it. Like, everything that's happened has just been so, like, haphazard, and like things have just kind of fallen in my path and I've just gone with it.
And is it random?
I think so. Like, it's all just very, like, nothing is planned really. Like, you know, like, all the big things that have happened in my life have kind of happened by chance. Like, me going and auditioning for the ballet school, that wasn't like a big planned out life goal. Yeah. Or getting that call to go to South Africa wasn't a planned out thing. Or, like, really none of it was, like, the only planned out thing that I knew I wanted to accomplish, what came a little bit later, is when I wanted to be on Drag Race. And that's what I decided I wanted to do. But it's all just been very kind of random. I remember this one random moment so vividly, being in grade 9 and going into my first ever musical theater dance class at Etobicoke School of the Arts. And the teacher was this, like, crazy hippie lady named Victoria, and she was just wild and amazing.
And Hey Victoria,
if you're listening. But I remember her, we were doing some dance thing or something, or she's teaching a combination, and I did it, and she just stopped and looked at me and was like, you're going to have a very interesting life. And then just walked away. And I was like, oh, but she was completely right. I mean, but that's that she knew. She literally looked at me. She was like, you're going to have an interesting one. And I was like, yeah, okay. And here I am.
Here you are.
Yeah.
Wow. And I think what I meant by is it random is there's no doubt that you are doing what you were put here to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's why, no, none of it was planned, but there was no doubt that you were going to get to where you are. And I, you know, can only imagine what's ahead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I know. It's been a really cool journey. I'm very lucky.
Yeah. So I have to say, we have some similarities, and I know while we knew each other, fairly well, we didn't get a lot of, like, just quality hangout time to get to know a lot about each other. So it's really interesting to hear about your life. You know, youngest of four, brought up in a Christian home, and that is me. I was the youngest of four, and obviously the favorite. I'm sure you are too.
Oh yeah, I mean, completely.
But. And also brought up in the church. And, you know, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I would love to hear your version or your story. But for me, it was very much, as my mom said, they were preaching hate in the pulpit. And I was brought up to believe that whenever I realized there was something different about me, mm-hmm. and that I would try to date boys, but it wasn't really landing. And, you know, I'm grateful. I never thought of harming myself. I did have moments where I would pray that I wouldn't wake up the next day. If the way mm-hmm. I feel is wrong, like, you know, I don't want to be bad. I don't want to be. And so it took a while for me to, you know, I'm fortunate that I have parents who are very supportive and weren't going to stand for hate and for someone to judge me. So they, you know, did stop going to that church, and which I'm, again, grateful for that support. So I'm curious what that was like for you.
Yeah. Well, I can't tell you how many times I prayed to just be normal, you know, like all mm-hmm. I wanted in the world. I was like, I just want to be like everyone else. Cause I felt so different and so my own thing. And all I wanted in the world was just to be like, just normal, just completely average and just have no one pay any attention to me. It was hard. It was hard. I was always, yeah, church was such a big part of my life from the first 18 years. Like I went every Sunday. We went twice on Sunday, in the morning and the evening, and then to youth group when I started to be a teenager. And yeah, it was my, like, everything. And it was also everything because that was like my social life, because I didn't really have a lot of friends at school, because my parents also didn't really want me hanging out with non-Christian people. And also I didn't want to, like, I didn't want to bring people to our house because I was embarrassed by how Christian mm-hmm. we were, and how, like, I was like, I don't know if they're going to be weird. Like, I don't want to, like, scare people off. So I just did not, our home was a very lovely home, but it was not a home I felt comfortable bringing non-Christians into, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. But like, for my Christian friends, like, it was the hangout. Like, everyone, like, that was fine, but just my non-Christian friends. And also, like, I was bullied. I wasn't bullied horribly, but I was definitely bullied, like, all my way through school. So, which weirdly turned into me becoming a bully at church. I think it's because I was so angry and just so, like, beaten down that I needed any excuse to feel powerful and make other people feel what I was feeling. So, like, at church, for some reason, I was, like, semi-popular, and I had a little group of friends, and like I would kind of like, I was like the mean girl, because like I just taking all of that that hate and everything I was getting at school, and I was putting it onto other people when I went to church, because just to make myself feel better. And that's all bullying is at the end of the day. It's just trying to make yourself feel better about your own insecurities. But yeah, it was hard, and I definitely, my parents had a hard time with it when I came out. Nothing dramatic. Like, I've always been loved and supported, but it was very well, we don't agree with your lifestyle choices. It was always a lifestyle choice kind of situation. Mm-hmm. And it created kind of an awkward situation, because there was always that pink elephant in the room you couldn't talk about. Like, I never felt like I'd fully share my life with them, especially my mom. I'm much closer to my mom than I am my dad. But it was always just kind of like this awkwardness and tension of that, this thing we couldn't talk about. And they were supportive of my career as a dancer. And it was weirdly enough, they even loved, like, when I was with the drag ballet company, Ballet Trocadero, they loved it. They came and saw it. They brought their friends. It was great. But it was the minute I stopped doing ballet and I started just doing drag that they were like, whoa. And they didn't understand. And they were like, what's this? And that just made things a lot more weird, even though I was fully doing drag before, but I was just also doing ballet with it. So yeah, and it just, for about like 5, 6, probably like my whole early 20s, like up to like 26, 27, there was just this weird, awkward tension. And we still talked and we still said, I love you, but it just, they weren't really part of my life, and I didn't really share anything about my life with them because I didn't want to, well, my mom, I didn't want to make her feel bad or sad or whatever she was feeling. So I just wouldn't say anything. And then my sister, I was in Nashville and I was doing a dragon dinner thing at Susie Wong's, which I just mm-hmm. found out is no longer. It's Susie Wong's.
This pandemic.
I know. It's crazy. But I was doing my dragon dinner show there, and my mom and my sister and my sister's partner, because my sister is also a lesbian, showed up. And it was my first time, like, my mom, I think I'd been having a really, like, rough time mentally, and I'd been telling my best friend about it, and I was just having, like, a shitty time. And my best friend called my mom and my sister and would just, like, let them know that I was having a tough time. So they jumped in the car and they drove 14 hours to come see my drag show. And that's the first time my mom ever saw my drag show. And it was just great. Like, it was, she really enjoyed it. I performed her favorite song, I Hope You Dance by Leanne Womack, which I absolutely hate, but I did it because I know she loves it. But yeah, it was, we had the nicest weekend, and it was just nice and normal. And it just felt like it was just this nice, I think it was also around the time that she separated from my father. And like, she could see like the wheels turning in her head and just learning more about acceptance and stuff. And she, at the end of the weekend, she wrote me a really nice card and basically just apologized for not loving me the way she should have, and were her words, and not being there for me the way she should have, and just letting me know how proud she was of me. And it was great. And ever since then, like, it's like we've been friends. Like, I can talk to her about anything. Like, I can tell her about my life if I'm dating someone. She asks about my job. Like, she loves the, like, she came to the premiere party of the Drag Race premiere party at our local bar in Toronto, which I might add was the very first time my mother, my 65-year-old mother at that point, had ever been to a bar. And the first bar she ever went to was a gay bar, which I was very impressed by.
I love it.
And it was just, it's just so funny to see her like open up and embrace things and just realize, like, she, that night she could not believe it, because she was there and she's like, I cannot believe how many people keep coming up to me and hugging me and saying how happy they are I'm here and how much they wish their mom would come to a gay bar and like all of this. And she was just like, she was like, I've never felt so welcomed and accepted anywhere by people. So
isn't that,
I know, crazy. So, but she just had the best time. And then on the finale of Drag Race, to watch the finale of Drag Race, she was in Ottawa, and her and my cousin went to a gay bar by themselves to go watch the finale.
I love it.
I know. So she's great. And she's really kind of just blossomed in her later years and just been really, really accepting and loving. And she's awesome. So that's been a really cool journey, which I love.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that. When you're sharing about her being in the bar, I have to share this. I won't share any names, but a friend, we took her mom to play.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you were performing. I can't remember exactly, but we were just so impressed that she went, because she's a very religious Christian woman. And she sat with her purse like this. It was like, I just know the Lord is going to come again when I'm in a gay bar.
That is a good line.
Oh my gosh.
Can I just say, there's very few things in the world I love more than like a Southern Christian woman.
Right.
I just think they're the funniest people ever.
I
just know the Lord is going to come again when I'm in a gay bar. I love it. That's brilliant.
She just knew it.
Just knew
it. Oh my gosh. But she had a really great time as well. So
yeah.
And people, you know, again, we're so accepting. And she was like, oh my gosh, everybody's so nice.
Yeah. They think it's this big scary thing. And my mom just couldn't believe like how nice everyone was. And she keeps in touch with a bunch of my gay friends, and they all love her, and they like look out for her and message her and checking on her during the pandemic and stuff. So
What a gift.
Yeah.
You know,
she's awesome.
Like, she's living, you know, like, she's got a reboot for her life, and
yeah, she
gets
really
to be
does.
Closer with you.
Yeah, it's great. And closer with me and closer with my sister, and just less weirdness, and just not standing for nonsense from people who don't agree with us or whatever. And she just won't stand for it, which I love. Yeah. She's always been very good about that. She's always stuck up for her children. There have been multiple times when we've gotten in trouble at school or something, and she feels that we shouldn't have gotten in trouble, and she'll just march right into that school. And my mom doesn't yell and she doesn't scream, but she'll just like very calmly and quietly ask what happened and the reason. And for some reason, she would always make the teacher cry. every time she'd walk out. She's like, you're not in trouble anymore.
Oh my God.
Like, oh, okay.
I love your mom.
My mom's Joan Hayhoe is a badass.
Don't mess with my babies.
So don't mess with Joan Hayhoe.
Oh my God, Joan. Is Joan tall as well?
No, Joan is not. She's an average height, I think 5'5", 5'6". Around
got it.
Nothing.
You're what, 6'2"?
I'm 6'3". I'm like the tallest person in my whole 6'3". Family. Yeah.
All right, tall drink of water.
I am. Mm-hmm.
and when he stands on it, when she stands on her hands at play dance bar or on the stage, it's like, wow.
It's even taller.
Standing queen. I love it. I love it. Okay, so you come to Nashville. Mm-hmm. You get a residency at play.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
That came about.
Or a boat.
That came about. So I was up in Toronto doing my drag thing, and I started competing in pageants. And so I went down to Louisville, Kentucky, and competed in the Entertainer of the Year pageant at the Connection.
Oh my gosh. I don't want to interrupt
you. No, go ahead.
Connections in Louisville was my first gay bar experience.
That was the first time I'd ever seen drag in like a theater setting.
Oh my gosh.
And I was hooked. I couldn't believe it.
Yes.
I had never seen it before. Like, I was like, this is the thing. Cause in Toronto it was like a 2x4 box at the side of the bar that you were just like,
did you ever go to Connections here in Nashville?
No, I was never around for that one.
I mean, the stage was taller. I mean, not that I'm that tall.
Yeah.
5'1" for the record, but it was as tall as me. And I remember just being like, what?
Yeah.
Because at Connections, it was a stage, but the connection in Louisville and then the Connections in Nashville. First of all, when someone's taking you there, you think they're taking you to kill you and leave you for dead, because it's like, it was down a street that, I mean, now it's different, but you're like, there are warehouses and no one's back here. And then you get back there and it's like this safe haven for people. Mm-hmm. And when I saw them on stage, I still remember, I don't remember the drag queen's name, but she would do Tyrone. You better call Tyrone.
Oh, Nicole Ellington Dupree.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good old Nicole. Oh,
I think I was drinking like Sex on the Beach back at that time or something like that. Anyway,
I love it.
I digress.
Connections
in Louisville.
Yeah, so I was I did Entertainer of the Year. I got first runner up at my first national pageant, which was a very big deal apparently. And then a month later, I went and did Miss Continental in Chicago, which is like the biggest drag pageant out of all of them. And I got first runner up there. So I went back the next year and I won it in 2014. And Joey Brown and Dee Dee Renner, Joey is the owner, one of the owners of Play, and Dee Dee Renner, whose stage name is Deception, who I'm sure you've seen perform a million
yes.
times,
million.
Were in the audience. And they messaged me like a month later and they'd be like, we'd love to have you come down and like do a weekend with us. And then I got down there and they were like, well, would you be interested in like moving down here and joining the cast? And I was like, oh, I mean, sure. I was like, cause I, at that point, my wheels drag race had really started to take off and was really a big thing. And I was seeing all of these queens go on the show and make lots of money and just like have these huge careers from it. So I was like, okay, well, I need to do that. This is what I love to do, then, and this is what I want to do. So I need to figure out how I can level up and kind of take this to the next stage. So I got them to agree to sponsor me for a work visa. And they did. And I got my work visa and I moved down to Nashville. And I'll never forget like driving into the city and just being like, what the fuck did I just do? Cause I'm like, honestly, cause like, again, completely random. Never in my life did I ever plan on living in Nashville, Tennessee. It's not a place that ever crossed my mind, but I just moved in and I was just like, oh, I was like, okay, well, and I'm like a big city, like Northern boy. And all of a sudden it's just like, here I am in the South. And it was just like, it was hard.
And at that time, Nashville was, you know, it's a little different these days, but Nashville was small town vibes.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's changed a lot in the last, even just the last 2 years. But yeah, it was very hard the first little while, and just kind of finding your footing in a new job in a new city. But it's such a great job. It was such a great job to have. It taught me so much about drag. And they were just great people to work for, honestly. Like, they let me take time off pretty much whenever I wanted it and travel around to do other gigs and stuff. And in terms of the way drag shows and casts are run, they were really good. Like, I had to punch in every day when I got in. I got a paycheck every 2 weeks. Like, they're very official and efficient, which is usually not the case when it comes to drag, which I really loved. So, and it was just a great way to meet people, because we always had drag race people coming into the bar and performing as guests with us and stuff. So it's really good. I'm going to be in Nashville in August. I'll be performing at Play. I don't know
what's the date.
I'm going to tell you right now. But yes, I will. I will be back soon, and I'm very. I know I'm very excited about it. I'm going to be there. Where is it? August 18th.
August 18th at Play.
It's a Wednesday, yes, but I will be there.
A Wednesday night.
Good old college night.
We'll be there. Liv and I will be there.
I can't wait.
I'm guessing the capacity restrictions and things like that will be different.
Oh, I'm sure. Time. By August, yeah. Well, I'm sure
it'll be packed for Brooklyn Heights.
I hope so. I'm very excited. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I was there for about 4 years. Almost 4 years before I got on the show. I auditioned for the show 3 times. First time when I was still living in Canada, and obviously I wasn't eligible. And then the second time I thought I was going to get on, which was season 10. And I got kind of far, and then all of a sudden they just stopped contacting me. I was like, what's going on? I was so upset about it. Like, months of like depression and just like, this is the end. They don't want me, blah, 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 blah. And then season 11 came around, and it was so weird. I was literally on Instagram, and like, I was scrolling, and the audition flyer from that Drag Race just put out said, now casting for season 11. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, well, I guess I'm going to do it. And I was like thinking about it, looking at my screen. And then my phone rang as I was looking at my screen, and it was one of the people, the execs from World of Wonder. And they were like, we just want to know if you're going to audition for the show this year. No. And I was like, I am now.
Yes.
So I
took you so long.
I know. I auditioned and I got on, and yeah, the rest is kind of history. It's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I really thought you were going to win.
Oh,
I really did.
That was never my goal. Honestly, like I was never like, when I think back to like, I was always, I want to be on RuPaul's Drag Race. It was never, I want to win RuPaul's Drag Race. Like, I never really said I want to win RuPaul's Drag Race. I always just wanted to be on the show. So that was never like my intention for some reason, which is strange.
Which is probably why you went so far, because you were just in it and enjoying the moment.
I think so. Like, I just wanted to do well. And I kind of realized that winning the show isn't everything. It's great, but you can do really well off the show. The show is just a springboard. It's on, and then it's off. And then you have to use that to take yourself to the next level.
Yeah.
You know?
Also a little springboard for a relationship. Just for a hot minute.
Just for a hot quick minute. Yeah. And now we're just great friends. Honestly,
I love that.
He's one of my good girlfriends in LA, and we hang out all the time when we're both in town and get into trouble. Probably not a day goes by that all we do is like send each other cute like cat videos on Instagram. We find cute animal reels and we just like send them back and forth, and that's our way of communicating.
Love it.
Yeah, he's great.
Did you get to spend time with RuPaul?
Not really. I got to spend a little time with him at the Emmys. I went to the Creative Arts Emmys with Nina West.
How was that?
It was really fun. It was fun / one of the most embarrassing moments of my life, which I'll get to in a minute. But
okay, great.
But we spent time. We got to spend a little time with RuPaul, and he's very nice. He's always been very, very sweet to me. But the embarrassing moment came. So we were all like, kind of at the side of the theater talking before the show started, and we are right beside the green room where all the celebs walk in. So I'm standing there, and like Kim Kardashian walks by, and Lisa Kudrow walks by, and just person after person, like all these like super famous people. And the, one of the people we were with, I was like, well, do you want to go in? And I was like, can we do that? He's like, yeah. So we, me and Nina and, oh, it was Jeffrey Boyer Chapman, who was one of the judges on Canada's Drag Race with me. That was the first time I had met him too. He's like, yeah, let's go. So we walk into the green room and I took pictures with Kim Kardashian and everyone, and it was great and wonderful.
OMG.
And then we come out and they're like, oh, the show started. And I was like, oh shit. Well, we have to find our seats. And me and Nina are both in heels and like large dresses. So they open the auditorium and they're like, they open the auditorium and we are at the front of the auditorium. So it's that orchestra level door. And I was like, okay. And I was like, where are our seats? So we showed the tickets and it was literally on the opposite side of where we were. So, and this is like a 5,000 person packed theater. So it was during like a commercial, like it was like a 30-second commercial break. And me and Nina West, these two fucking football players in wigs, had to bolt across the entire theater. Everyone was just literally sitting there like staring at us. And we had to run past RuPaul, who's sitting front row center. And he was just like what's happening? And we didn't make it to our seats. We literally ran from one door to the other door. And then we had to wait for the next commercial break to actually get our seats. And then getting into our seats, like obviously we're like, excuse me, sorry, with these giant dresses. It was so embarrassing. I was like, of course this happens. My first ever award show. It was horrible. But funny. Well, it's a good story now.
It's a good story. Yeah. You lived to tell about it.
I did.
You know? Mm-hmm. Wow. So what was your favorite moment on RuPaul's Drag Race? I mean, mine was when I already shared. He was like, Pam queer.
Right.
And then you just blew their minds.
That was a really great moment just because that had been a really hard week for me with Snatch Game. And thank God that runway was that week. Like the theme for that runway was that outfit. I was like, yes, I have something here. But yeah, I'll never forget like coming out there and like striking my pose and then walking and then just doing that reveal and like the poncho coming off and just seeing RuPaul's face just go, ooh, like he would like all of them, but like he just gagged and he was just like he was just going off. And honestly, that's what you want from the show. You're there. You want to make RuPaul laugh. You want to make him like, cause he's very stoic and like, you want to crack him. That's the fun part. And that's kind of like when you know you've done a good job. So that was, and you want like an iconic moment, like an iconic memeable moment. And I hadn't had one yet. So that was like my iconic moment. So I'll never forget that.
Yeah. It's so good.
It was a good
moment. And I think about the moments at play when you're doing your thing from a handstand down to a split and people are just losing their shit. And I'm like, I want everyone in my life to experience that. And so that, I think that moment, I was just so excited for you and the dance off.
Oh yeah.
I don't remember who it was against, but I was like, yes.
Oh, Evie?
Maybe.
With the lip sync, the sorry, not sorry lip sync.
Yeah,
that was me and Evie that week.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good one. Yeah, it was fun. But that's that week is probably like, that episode is probably my favorite thing from the show.
So you come off of RuPaul's Drag Race, runner up, and then what? Are you just inundated with, I mean, you've been on the cover of New York Magazine.
I know, that was weird. That cover.
Incredible.
Thank you.
So what did life look like after that?
Well, like right after you film the show, then you have to go back. That's the hardest part because you have to go back to normal life and pretend like nothing's happened. And we had to do that for like 9 months. Like it was like 9 months before we were even announced and almost a year before like the show started airing. So
it's almost like you've been on The Bachelor.
I know. It's crazy. Like, so,
you gotta hide.
But once it started, it was just nuts. Like it just took off and I was just crazy busy and it was wonderful. But it's kind of weird, like, cause you know, they filmed the show and then you have to wait all this time and then they have the live finale that they film at the end. So like, if you get all the way to the end, you're still in kind of competition mode. You're still in the competition. Like if you got kicked off, it's fine, whatever, you're done. But like, I had to wait like a whole year for this competition to end, which is crazy. And then it was around the time of DragCon and around the time that we filmed the finale of Drag Race that I got the call about Canada's Drag Race. And it was just perfect timing because I think it was like right after I lost. So I was just kind of like, okay, well, I didn't win. I guess I have to go do All Stars. Or like, that's the scary part. It's like you get all this like momentum and you get all this fame and you get all this press. And then all of a sudden your season ends and it just goes away. And like what goes up must come down. And it's this like really jarring feeling because you've been on this whirlwind and all of a sudden this panic sets in of like, okay, well, I'm not on TV anymore. Like my 15 minutes are up. How am I going to keep myself relevant? Like all this stuff. And there's so many Drag Race queens now that it's really hard to kind of set yourself apart. So when the Canada's Drag Race thing came along, I was just like, it was like, the heavens opened up and like answered my prayers because I had really been really struggling with like, well, what am I going to do to kind of like keep everything going? And then that just kind of literally fell in my lap. And I was like, absolutely. This is what we're going to do.
So much goodness. And I think, so what during those times when everything kind of what goes up must come down, like how did you stay grounded? And like, because I know we met through yoga,
yes,
which I know is a practice that can be very grounding, mm-hmm. but also other things. So what did you do during that time to, I guess, stay grounded and stay open?
I was so busy. I didn't have time to do anything regularly. Like I was like flying all over the place and just traveling. And it was just this real like, and I love being busy, but at the same time, I'm one of those people that I'm like, I wish I was busy. And then the minute I was busy, I'm like, I want a vacation. I'm tired.
Yeah.
So I always want what I can't have. But I think my friends, definitely my friends and family have kept me very grounded and kind of kept me connected in reality at moments when I wasn't. And this last year, kind of what's kept me grounded and stuff has definitely been exercise. I mean, I live in LA, I live right by Runyon Canyon, which is this great hike and kind of in the middle of West Hollywood area. So I do that when I'm in LA, I do that pretty much every morning just to start off my day. And I do a little bit of meditation. When I get to the top, I do about 15 minutes of guided meditation, which is nice. Which I have no idea if I'm doing correctly. That's the weird thing about meditation. Like, I'm like, I don't know how to do it. And I don't think anybody knows. I'm like, what am I supposed to feel? Am I supposed to be like, it's just one of those things. I'm like, I just try not to think and I just try to breathe. And I'm like, I guess that's what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah. You can't get it wrong, you know? And I think that's the misconception. You're right. Like you have to sit in a perfect seat and, you know, sit upright and close your eyes and all the things, but really it's just a practice of awareness and a moment to be still.
Yeah.
You know, we're so on the go. So it's a moment to be still and it can look different for everyone.
Totally.
You know, it could be looking out over the scenery once you get to the top and just taking it in and just taking a moment to be present. And, you know, I know for me, it's just going in and out of the present moment and creating awareness of like, oh, I just, you know, was going to the grocery or I was thinking about a conversation I need to have. Come back to like the sounds, the birds, the view, what's right here. So I definitely, you can't get it wrong.
I know, but I don't like that at the same time because I like rules. I want to know. I like structure. Yes. I like rules. So I'm like, but yeah, no,
that's why guided meditations are good.
Yeah. I love them. I do like them. But yeah, so I do that. I haven't done yoga in a really long time, actually. I've gotten more into Pilates. I love Pilates. That's one of my like favorite workouts just because it's so, I find it very easy on the body because it's all resistance training. So you leave not feeling like you've been hit by a truck, which I like. But yeah, I was really grateful to find yoga when I did because I actually started going to Shakti because I had a really bad groin injury from doing drag. I've been doing a, I've been doing a drag brunch at Susie Wong's, and I think I think what happened is I think I just drank a lot that weekend, and I did not have a lot of water, and I was super dehydrated, and I slammed down into the splits, and I literally heard a snap, crackle, and a pop, like I've never heard before, and I got home and my leg just blew up, and I was so swollen, and I had a bruise. I kid you not, from my knee to my groin, like down my genitals, was just like a black mass. And so I definitely tore something, but at the same time I had no health insurance. So I was like, I can't go to the hospital. So I went to a physio and they were like, yeah, you definitely tore something. So I had, it was like probably about 2-3 weeks that I couldn't really perform very well. And then I was like, okay, well I need to, that was kind of a wake up call for me, because I hadn't really been doing anything athletic and taking care of myself. And I found Shakti, and that really helped me get back into the groove and helped me get my strength and flexibility back. I can still totally feel it. Like I'm not as flexible as I was before that happened, but I can still, but it definitely like helped me get my shit together again.
Yeah. Well, I hate that you had that injury. It sounds terrible.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that you found Shakti and that that's how we got to be.
I know. You know? Yeah, Shakti was so great. Cool.
You know, that's how things happen. Mm-hmm. When we least expect it, for sure. I just remember this beautiful human in the room with these long legs and so strong and graceful. And I was like, who the fuck is that?
I think everyone else was like that too. I was like, I'm like one of the only, like, I think definitely one of the only gay people, gay men who go there that I've seen anyway. In my,
not anymore.
Good. Good.
Yes. Yes. But I was, for those listening that, if you don't know Brock or Brooklyn Heights, he's equally handsome as Brock and stunning as Brooklyn Heights. So he was a stunning human in the room. And I was just like, you know, I don't like men, but I'm very drawn to this person. So I need to know him. Wow. Okay. You talked about keeping things going. How do I keep things going? Mm-hmm. You have had, what's going on with Live Nation and the Queen of the North?
Oh,
I know you did a video.
My music video. Yes.
Yes.
That was just kind of like a fun project for me to do. Honestly, like I am not, like I said earlier, I'm not musically inclined, and I filmed that at the end of 2019 actually, or no, I recorded that at the end of 2019, and it was just like a fun, sure, we'll do it. Like my manager basically forced me to do it because I was like, I don't want to do this. Like I have a terrible voice. Like it just wasn't my thing. I didn't care. But he was like, just do it. Just do it. And I was like, fine. So I went and recorded it, forgot about it for like literally a year. And then he was like, hey, they want to do a video for the Queen of the North. And I was like, well, I'm not paying for it. So if you find a sponsor, then absolutely we can. So they found, we teamed up with Absolute Vodka and they paid for the whole thing. And we shot it, and it was just turned into this really beautiful, like high quality project, which I was super excited about. I think my whole trepidation with it was I've seen so many drag queens put out music, and I'm just like, some of there's a very small percentile that's like has good voices, and then the rest is just putting out a single for the sake of it. And I was like, I don't want to be that person, but then I turned into that person.
I mean, you had a sponsor, and you know, Live Nation is a incredible.
Oh, they're great. Yeah,
yeah, like their movement with just women headlining—that's the word I'm looking for. Yeah. Women headlining, and to see them doing that with you, that was really cool.
Yeah, it was awesome. They're definitely, they're good people,
upping their diversity and inclusion, and really doing good things. So. Is there anything else that you want to touch on before I ask you a few just fun questions?
I'm trying to think. Oh, I have one little thing I want to plug. Speaking of podcasts, I have my own podcast now with
Tell Us.
Yes, with Priyanka, the winner of season one of Canada's Drag Race, and it's called Famous This Week, and it's a really fun podcast where we just talk about like what's happened that week in pop culture, like what's famous that week. And we just kind of go through the rundown and we go off on our own little tangents of things. And it's really great. I love talking to her because she's so different than me, personality wise. And we just have a really, really good time. So you can find all that stuff on my Instagram. and stuff.
Tell us your Instagram.
Beheights. Beheites.
How did Brooklyn Heights come to be, the name?
The name from my drag mother. Her name is Fahrenheit, and she's a kind of a legendary, one of the legendary pageant queens of Toronto. And yeah, she adopted me. And I remember I was just doing her show one night, and I think my name at the time was like Bianca or Carmen or something. And she said, the worst names.
Okay.
I was in the dressing room.
If there's a Bianca or Carmen listening, your name is fine.
No, but for this one, your name is fine. It's just for like, but for drag, it's just like
no.
Simple.
We can do better.
So I was in the dressing room and she was on stage emceeing, and she's like, up next, I'm going to bring to the stage my newest drag daughter, Brooklyn Heights. And so she just named me, and I was like, who is that? They're like, that's you. And I was like, oh, party. So off I toddled.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a great name. Yeah. So you shared that friends and family have been important to you during this time. Mm-hmm. What do you do that brings you a lot of joy? Like, obviously if you're not on stage, what brings you a lot of joy? I call it joy pop.
Joy pop. Sleeping. I love sleeping. I love sleeping. Honestly, like,
you're so cute.
I do. I love to sleep.
Liv also would say that sleep brings her a lot of joy.
Sleep does bring me joy. I mean, I really haven't been able to do a lot of stuff this last year that brings me joy. I love traveling. That brings me a lot of joy. Mm-hmm. I haven't been able to do a lot of that. I think definitely working out. I've found joy in that, and being outdoors in nature. I enjoy that. I love animals. Animals, I think, are the number one things that bring me joy. My two kittens.
You have a pet? Two cats.
I have two kittens who I love very much, and they bring me lots of joy.
What are their names?
Henry and
Apollo. Bianca and Carmen.
No, Henry and Apollo.
Cute.
Yeah, they're very sweet. Yeah.
If you had a billboard, what would it say?
If I had a billboard, what would it say? Oh, God. A smile is better than talent.
Ooh, I love that. And you have a great smile.
I do have a good smile.
I love that you own it. You're like, yes, actually.
I do. You're correct. I do have a good smile.
Did you wear braces, or were you born this way?
No, I wore braces. But the thing was, I had one crooked tooth down here. This is all the same.
Okay.
But I had four teeth pulled, and then because my lips used to be so much bigger than this. Like, they used to be like this.
Really?
And I couldn't close my mouth. Like, I was like, this is what I look like as a teenager. Just like, I don't know. I look so weird. So they remove four.
Are you serious?
I swear to God. They remove four teeth and like shove my jaw back into my face. And I think that's the main reason I had braces. But yeah, my teeth have always.
You have to drink your food through a straw for a while?
No, it was just like braces. It was over like 2 years. Okay. It was like a slow progression.
Would you kill for those lips now?
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
I'm like, I kind of wish you hadn't done that.
I was actually thinking you have really great lips.
Thank you.
And your eyebrows are on point.
I have huge eyebrows. And it's so funny because I used to pluck them. Like in my early 20s, I went through this.
Super thin.
Oh, they were so bad. So I'm very thankful that they came back because I love them.
You learned your ways there of your ways. Are you watching anything right now? Do you have a show that you're hooked on or that you've watched recently?
Yeah, one of the shows I've watched recently is called Superstore.
Superstore.
Yeah, and I love it. It's with America Ferrera from Ugly Betty. And yep. It's very in the, I love shows like Parks and Rec and The Office and things like that. And it's very in that vein. And it's about like a Costco style superstore and just about the employees that work there. And it's great. I love it.
Okay.
I also am obsessed with Handmaid's Tale. I know.
Yes, same.
And the thing is, like,
it makes me want to move to Canada.
I know, but like, I could not watch it for the longest time because while Trump was in office, I was like, this is just too real.
It's too close to home.
Yeah, it was too real. But as soon as like the election happened and things started feeling a little bit more hopeful, I just like, I sat down and I started watching, and I shit you not, it was a week long binge session. I didn't go to sleep one night because I couldn't stop watching. I literally stayed. I pulled an all-nighter and just kept clicking episodes, and like,
couldn't stop.
And it was like, oh, it's 6 a.m. I guess I'll go on a hike. And then I went on a hike. But like it was. It's just so good. I love it. And I haven't been like that into a TV show in a while.
Right. It's one of those that's very hard to watch sometimes. Mm-hmm. And also you cannot look away. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I enjoy sleep too. 9 o'clock, I'm like, why aren't we in bed yet?
Yeah.
And Liv is a professional sleeper. And when we watch Handmaid's Tale, it's, you know, we could just keep one more.
Yeah.
One more.
Oh, totally.
One more.
Totally.
It's like I'm in Vegas at a casino. I have no idea what time it is. And they're just pumping oxygen.
Right. And there's nothing I love more than finding a show that has like 5 seasons and you just get obsessed with it. And then, oh, I love binging a show. And then that emptiness you feel when it's done and you're just like,
what do I do?
What is life anymore?
I felt that because I just watched Better Call Saul, mm-hmm. and which it's excellent. It's, you know, the precursor to Breaking Bad.
Okay.
And when I finished it, I had already watched Breaking Bad. So whenever I finished Better Call Saul, I felt the same way. Mm-hmm. So now I'm rewatching Breaking Bad.
Oh yeah. I love rewatching a series. I rewatched The Office like 4 times, Parks and Rec probably 2. I rewatched The Gilmore Girls during the pandemic as well.
Same.
Yeah.
Did you watch The Reunion?
It's just not the same. It was okay. It wasn't the same. But
the acting wasn't good.
Yeah, it was just kind of like.
But I still watched it because.
Yeah.
Lorelai, Rory.
I know.
Like, you just.
I honestly just. Yeah. Half the time, I just wanted to slap both of them.
Same.
I was like, please get your shit together.
Get your shit together.
Like,
right?
My favorite characters are definitely Emily and Mrs. Kim and Luke.
Oh my gosh.
I love Emily and Mrs. Kim. They're the best.
You're like, nobody puts baby in a corner. I had no idea that they were the same.
Yeah.
The mom.
Yeah.
On Dirty Dancing.
Yeah.
Gilmore.
I know.
Anyways, it took me a minute to get there. And then when I realized it, I was like, OMG.
Yep. Totally.
That is. Oh, well, I'm looking for a new one to binge. So if you've got one.
Superstore is
great. You have another one. What is
Superstore.
It? Superstore.
Give that a try. And it's good, just like feel good, easy.
Like Schitt's Creek, we just
this
rolled through.
Yeah, this last year has been all about escapism for me. Like I can't do anything too serious. Yes. Like it's all had to be like, it's been like Princess Diaries and like light fluff. And yeah, honestly, just anything that like takes me out of reality for a second is kind of what I'm here for.
I feel that. Oh, I can't wait for Liv to listen to this episode because, you know, she deals with some anxiety and I haven't had that much in my life. So, you know, I totally respect that. She's like, can we rewatch Friends for the, like, literally the 50 something time from beginning to end? And Princess Diaries, she loves that show.
Yep.
Mean Girls, Clueless, Dirty Dancing, like just things that we know that what's going to happen and it's going to lift up.
I'm totally there. I deal with anxiety as well. And that's a huge thing. Like just watching something where I know exactly what's going to happen. It's great. Yep. I love it.
Quick. I don't know why I didn't think to ask this before. Mm-hmm. How long does it take you to get ready for a show? And what is that? Give us a little idea of what that process is like.
Probably about like an hour and a half, an hour 45. And that's if like I'm taking my time. Honestly, like half of the battle is like the prep work. Like, and by prep work, I mean shaving and then gluing down my eyebrows and all of that stuff before you actually even like basically erasing my features before you actually even get to the makeup part. But yeah, it takes about the makeup part probably takes about an hour, hour and 15. And then everything else is a little bit quicker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your favorite song to perform?
I haven't performed in so long. I don't even know what for. Favorite song to perform. I love Annie Lennox. I love performing Annie Lennox for some reason. So right now, probably Here Comes the Rain Again by the Eurythmics is a favorite of mine. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that.
I love it. And what are you listening to right now? Is there like a go-to song that you put on? If you're feeling low,
What am I listening to right now? Oh, here's a great song, Higher by Vincent. Do you know Vincent?
Yeah,
Higher by Vincent. You would love that one. It's like the it's like the song of the summer. It is like a gay anthem, and it's just a feel good jump around.
I love
that. Yeah, it's amazing.
I'm gonna look it up.
You should, for sure. Yeah, that's the one. Vincent.
Ah.
It's a good one.
Yes! I'm feeling it.
You gotta wait till the chorus. The chorus is so good.
It's about to pick up. I can feel it.
Right?
Where have you been all my life? Yes. So Higher by Vincent. V-I-N-C-I-N-T. Oh. What else could we even do? Brock.
What?
I love you.
I love you too.
I love you so much. I'm just so grateful. So grateful that you exist.
Oh, thank you.
And I am very inspired by you always, and just excited to see there's some things coming up, so keep an eye out.
Yes,
for Brooklyn Heights.
Some exciting things.
Instagram's the best place, right?
Yeah.
To get the latest and greatest news. So
absolutely.
Some things coming up for Brooklyn Heights, and just thank you for your time.
You're so welcome.
And for sitting down and sharing, and Happy Pride Month.
Happy Pride Month to you, too.
Mm-hmm. And we'll see you at August 18th at Play.
Yes, August 18th here in Nashville. At Play. I cannot wait.
I cannot wait. And thank you for sharing your intermission. Rock.
My pleasure.
Boom, boom, boom. We'll take it out.